Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve!
Eric Volterstoff was 25 years old one day when he went mountain climbing, and it was a day like any other day, except for the fact that on this particular day, he had an accident, and he died mountain climbing. Eric's father is a very smart man named Nicholas Volterstoff. He teaches at Yale, and he wrote a book about the suffering that he went through because of the loss of his son. The book is called Lament for a Son. And in this book, Nicholas Volterstoff writes about how the hardest part of dealing with his son's death was the finality of it. Like, he could hardly bring himself to look at pictures of his son as a child because he knew that he wouldn't get to see pictures of his son walking through life anymore. He writes about how sometime after the death, he was putting away some of Eric's things. And as he looked at Eric's belongings, in his mind, he could almost hear Eric saying, "Hey, Dad, I'm back." And he realized he was never going to hear his son's voice again. Well, in this new series, we're going to talk about Tales from the Dark Side. What do we do when the lights go out and we start to live in the shadows and life becomes very painful? And one of those occasions for all of us is when we experience loss. And the truth is, at some point, we all experience loss. You love someone and they die. Or it might be a marriage that didn't turn out the way you hoped or has ended in enormous pain. Or maybe a person's hurt you and the relationship has died. For some of you, it's a life that has turned out disappointing. Or maybe you go to the doctor and your health, which has always been great, all of a sudden it becomes threatened. For some, it involves a child. For others, it's the death of a dream. You know, the truth is that the storm of loss hits everyone. And when it does, we ask questions. Sometimes we scream our questions. Sometimes we ask questions of people. And sometimes we scream our questions at God. And what I want to do today is talk through some of the questions that people have been asking for a very long time and try to think together about what the Bible has to say about loss and about suffering. The first question I think that we pose when we go through the dark side of loss is, why me? Right? Why me? Why am I going through this? Am I being punished for something I've done? Am I being singled out somehow? Why me? Now, the truth is that sometimes I bring suffering on myself. Right? The reality is there are some types of suffering that I bring on myself. Let's get a show of hands on this. How many of you have ever gotten a speeding ticket? You can just put them up there high, wave them with pride. Okay, follow-up question. How many of you were actually speeding when you got the speeding ticket? Yeah, right? Now, some of you have not gotten speeding tickets you should have gotten because you were speeding, you just didn't get caught. I know because I watched you leaving the parking lot. You guys drive fast. But there are some types of suffering that we bring on ourselves, right? I mean, if you eat enough, smoke enough, sit around enough without exercises, you're going to end up with health problems. Abusive people tend to end up lonely. Sometimes I bring suffering on myself. But other times, some of the deepest and hardest pain we go through may involve suffering that has no apparent reason for it at all, you know? And part of the reason that wounds us so deeply is that we live with this illusion of control. You know, we feel like we're in control of our lives, that if we can just kind of figure life out and be smart enough and good enough, that I can make my life accident-proof, you know, suffering-proof. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, something happens, disaster strikes, disease comes, disappointment hits, and then you realize that life on this planet is incredibly fragile for even the best of us, even the smartest of us, even the strongest of us. There's a guy named Jerry Stitzer, and he wrote a book reflecting on loss. One day he was driving in his car, and a drunk driver came across the median, struck his car head on, and in that moment, his daughter, his mother, and his wife all died. He lived through the accident, but three generations of his family all gone through no fault of his own. And he writes about how he would just replay the drive over and over again, asking the questions that you're prone to ask. What if we had just left 10 seconds earlier? What if we had left 10 seconds later? What if we had taken another route? What if instead we had... It's like, how can such horrible loss come in what Stitzer calls the terror of randomness? Right? You know, it just seems like such a random event. And he writes about how he discovered over time that sometimes you just never know why. You ask the question, why me? And sometimes you can ask that question for an entire life without ever receiving an answer. And he writes in this book about how one day, finally, another question struck him. After a long time of why me, a new question struck him. And it might be phrased like this: why not me? Why not me? In other words, how can I assume that my life won't have suffering and loss? Am I somehow better or more important than a baby that's born to a starving mother in Somalia? Why would I assume that I'm exempt from suffering? And he writes about how he gradually realized that if he was going to weather this incredible storm of loss that had hit his life, the much more important question, and it's the next one I want us to consider, it was not why me, but how will I respond? How will I respond? That's the next question. How am I supposed to respond when I go through deep loss? And I want to start here by telling you what the Bible does not say. All right? Because there can be a lot of confusion about this amongst people who are believers and show up at churches and things like that. There's a lot of confusion. What the Bible does not say is that the Bible does not tell you to pretend like it doesn't hurt. The Bible does not say to pretend like it doesn't hurt. A lot of us were taught growing up that we should act like it doesn't hurt. Like that's a sign of real strength, right? Like, don't cry out loud. Keep it inside. Learn how to hide your feelings. And it was like, man, if we could just do that, you know, we would be strong people. In some churches, and maybe you've been to this church, these churches, you even get credit if you walk through suffering and loss, something catastrophic happens, and you just seem like you're taking it in stride. People are like, oh, look how spiritual he is. Look how spiritual she is. Something horrible happened, and they just smiled and kept saying they were fine. In some churches, you're almost taught to play it out like it's some kind of game. When I was a kid, my sister and I would sit in the back seat on long trips, and we would ask the question that every brother and sister have asked their parent on every long trip. We would say over and over, Are we there yet? And throughout the trip, we would complain about how it was too hot in the car, it was too cold in the car, we were hungry, we were too cramped in the back seat. Are we there yet? And my mother, she would do this thing. She would say to us, she would say, hey, I have an idea. Why don't you two play the quiet game? Right? Yeah, you've played this as well. In case you haven't, it's a very simple game, but we were very simple children. The quiet game, the way you play is, you're quiet. You just don't say anything. You don't speak. And my mother would say, it's a wonderful game. You should play the quiet game. And so we would start playing the quiet game. Do you know how you win the quiet game? So who can be quiet the longest, right? Who can we get to shut up longer in the back seat? And so she got a lot of mileage out of this stupid game. And I will never forget the day after years of this that we were driving along and this sudden liberating thought occurred to me. All of a sudden I thought, you know, I don't have to play the quiet game. I can be unquiet. I can speak. I don't think my mother will punish me if I don't play the quiet game. I don't think there's anything worse. If she did punish me, I don't think it would be worse than having to drive endless mile after endless mile in silence. You know what? I don't have to play the quiet game anymore because I am 17 years old. And I don't have to do this anymore. The problem is that sometimes in church, we encourage people to play the quiet game. You know, it's subtle. We just say, hey, pretend like it doesn't hurt. You know, show by your stoic silence how strong you are. And if people ask how you're doing after you've gone through this traumatic event, just say you're fine and smile. People also sometimes will try to escape their pain by being busy or watching TV or addictive behaviors or spending lots of money or plunging themselves into work. People sometimes think that being a Christian, it means that you go through really hard losses and you just don't grieve. And I want to tell you this, I have no idea where that idea came from. I really don't know. I don't know where it came from. But one thing I do know is that it does not come from the Bible. It is not in the Bible. So one of the most popular books in the Bible is a book called Psalms. If you have a Bible with you and you want to open up the Psalms, usually if you can open your Bible up right in half, you're going to be right around the Psalms or right in it if you're really good and you can divide a Bible right in half. But I'm a professional. It may take you a couple tries. The book of Psalms has 150 of these psalms. Psalms are songs or poems that people wrote to God. That's what they are. It's a book of songs and poems people wrote to God. And there are some psalms that express praise to God, and there are some that express thanks to God. But the most common kind of psalm is what, like, Bible scholar type of people call psalms of lament. And what they are psalms of pain, of just expressing pain and questions. And you read the Psalms and they're just filled with questions like, why God? Where are you, God? How long will you hide your face from me, God? Where are you, God? You should read through the Psalms sometimes. They're powerful. Let's just read one together. Psalm 13. If you don't have a Bible, that's totally fine because we will put the Psalm on the screen for you to read. The first five sentences of the Psalm are just questions for God. Psalm 13 says, how long, Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and day after day have sorrow in my heart? How long will my enemy triumph over me? Look on me and answer, Lord my God. Give light to my eyes, or I will sleep in death. And my enemy will say, I have overcome him. And my foes will rejoice when I fall. And it's kind of cool because after expressing this, there's kind of this turn here. And I think part of it is because this person who wrote this, his name is David, he felt free to express his pain to God. Because then he writes, but I trust in your unfailing love. My heart rejoices in your salvation. I will sing the Lord's praise, for he has been good to me. And there are just a bunch of psalms like that. And what you need to know is that the God of the Bible is a very big God who can handle your questions and your anger over your hurt and your loss. And some of you have been playing the quiet game for too long. Some of you have losses you've never mourned. You have tears you've never shed. And honestly, what you need to do is you need to stop escaping. You need to stop running away, and you need to face the sadness. Maybe you need to find a friend who you can share it with. Perhaps it's a person in your microgroup if you are in one of those here at Verve, or maybe it's a pastor, maybe it's a Christian counselor. Maybe you just need to get away for a day to a secluded place and just pour your heart out to God. The second question we tend to ask is, or we need to ask, is how do I respond to loss? And part of the answer is that it's okay to grieve. We're supposed to grieve. Pour your heart out to God. Write your own psalm to him. Another question asked by those who experience loss, and in fact, I think we all wrestle with it at some point, to some degree, is how do I protect myself from loss? You know, in this dangerous world, in a world where things happen, how can I protect myself from loss? You know, when you hurt and you go through that healing process and you finally get to a place where you're okay again, that there's a part of you that says, man, I don't want to go through that kind of pain ever again. And what I realize is that if I give my heart to another person, he or she might reject me, that they might die. If I pour my life out for my child, she might run away. He might disappoint me. If I give myself to a dream, the dream might shrivel up. I might go for it and fail. I don't want to take that kind of risk again. So how do I protect myself from loss? You know what the short answer to this one is? You can't. You can't, not in this world. You know, it's funny, sometimes people think that being a Christian, being a person of faith, gets you kind of a free pass from suffering. You know, it's like, because God loves me and I now love him and I put my faith in him, I don't have to go through all the bad stuff everybody else does. Like God will protect me from that. No, and that's not what Jesus taught at all. In fact, one of the things that Jesus said to his followers, he said, in this world, you will have trouble. Just like everybody else. In this world, you're going to have trouble. What you can do in life is you can choose to love. You can choose to risk. And what all that means is sometimes you're going to get hurt. Or what you can do is you can choose to be safe. You can choose to live a very safe life. And what that means is that inside of you, your heart will shrivel up and die. Those are the options. One of the really great Christian writers of all time is a guy named C.S. Lewis. He's also the guy who wrote the Chronicles of Narnia stories. And when he was about 9 years old, when he was a child, his mom died. And it was very painful for him. And the rest of his life, he just kind of arranged his life and all of his relationships so he could play it safe, so he'd never have to again experience the kind of pain he did as a youngster when his mom died. Well, he grew up to become a great Christian thinker and writer, and then something very odd happened to him. When he was in his late 50s, after living this very safe and protected life, he fell in love with a woman. He'd always tried to guard his heart against that because he knew he could get hurt, but he couldn't control it. He fell in love with this woman, and he married her, and she got a disease, and it was a terminal disease. And it went into remission for a little bit, but then it came back and she died. And this, in the midst of all this, this brilliant, very careful man wrote these words. He wrote, "To love it all is to be vulnerable. Love anything and your heart will certainly be wrung and possibly be broken. If you want to make sure of keeping it intact, you must give your heart to no one, not even an animal. Wrap it carefully around with hobbies and little luxuries. Avoid all entanglements. Lock it up safe in the casket or coffin of your selfishness. But in that casket, safe, dark, motionless, airless, it will change your heart. It will not be broken. It will become unbreakable, impenetrable, irredeemable." You know, some of you have been hurt, and so you live in this fear of being hurt again. And so you've kind of closed up your heart and you've refused to love and you're afraid to dream and you're avoiding friendships. You're fleeing from risk. You've been isolating yourself. And the truth is that that way of life, it's not life. That way of life is death. And what some of us need to do, maybe today, is we need to choose life again. We need to choose to open our hearts, get back in the game, and live again. Which brings us to the next question, and it's one of the deepest questions people ask when they experience the dark side of loss, and it's the question of, where is God? Where's God? How long, oh God, will you forget me forever? The psalm writer wrote, you know, in the midst of pain and suffering, in the presence of the kind of death and darkness that puts such a curse on this world and often on our lives, where is God? Now, I'm just going to be really honest with you. There are not easy answers to this question, but there are answers to this question. In fact, on Easter Sunday, it's like 7 weeks from now, we're going to start a series where we are going to deal with the toughest questions that Christians and Christianity faces. And the kind of questions that you think would never be talked about in church, we're going to talk about them here. And one of the questions we're going to talk about is, and where is God when people hurt? Like if God is so loving, why would he allow evil to come into this world? And why does he allow all the bad things that happen to good people? Okay, and so we're going to take an entire Sunday to answer that question. For now, I'll just say that while I don't understand all the answers to this question, what I do understand is that God gave people free will. God's ultimate goal, his plan, is love. And for people to choose love, they have to be able to choose. And so God gave people the freedom to choose. And what that meant is that people would be free to choose to disobey God as well as to obey him. And God's plan for humanity and for each person has always been a plan of love. But what has happened is people, with their free will, have chosen to go against God's plan. And so, you know, it's this freedom. Parents could neglect their children instead of loving them. The rich could ignore the poor instead of feeding them. Nations could go to war against each other instead of befriending one another. And when people chose wrong, and as people have continually chosen wrong, what it's done is it's brought sin into the world. And it's just unleashed forces of death and pain and suffering. And so we live in this really dark world. Aren't you glad you're here today? Isn't this like encouraging and fun stuff? Yay! But we do. We live in this dark world, right? But what we need to do is we need to be really clear about God's heart in all of this. Because sometimes people misunderstand because of the world we live in. And they'll kind of paint this picture of God as a cruel character who just kind of like, you know, says, today I think I'm going to send a tornado and you know, I'm going to hit that house, but nah, not that one. And we'll swing it around here. And that is not God's heart at all. The Bible does not speak of death as a tool of God. In fact, if you read the Bible, what you'll find is that it speaks of death as the enemy of God. The language the Bible uses is that death is the enemy. God is unalterably and eternally opposed to it. Death, no matter what you may think or what you may hear in our world today, death is not a natural part of life. Death was not intended to be part of God's plan for life. Death is actually unnatural. God did not want there to be evil in this world. He didn't mean for people to suffer. He didn't mean for people to die, but he gave us freedom to choose. And we brought all of that on and into this world through our choice to sin. So this question, where is God? The answer is that the Bible teaches that God is with those who suffer. He's with those who suffer. This is the message of the cross. See, on the cross, Jesus took not only our sin and guilt, but also our suffering and pain. Jesus is actually called in the Bible the man of sorrows. You don't hear that a lot. It doesn't say, you know, you don't ever see bumper stickers for churches. Come to our church. We worship the man of sorrows. We can bring sorrow to your life. But think about it. Of all the gods that human minds have ever devised, of all the gods that people have worshipped through the ages, the only God who's the one true God of the Bible who suffers with us and for us is this God of the Bible. I mentioned earlier this guy, Nicholas Volderstoff, who wrote the book about the suffering he went through when his son died in a tragic mountain climbing accident, and how one day he was taking boxes of Eric's stuff to put them away. And as he looked at Eric's stuff, in his mind, he could just hear Eric, almost as if he was standing behind him, saying, "Hey, Dad, I'm back." And he realized, no, he was never going to hear that voice again. Well, Volderstoff goes on to write how through his pain, eventually where it led him was to see the suffering of God, that God experienced and continues to experience all the suffering that we go through, that God lost a son. And this is what he writes. "It is said of God that no one can behold his face and live. I always thought that was because no one could see God's splendor and live. A friend said, perhaps it means that no one could see God's sorrow and live. Or perhaps God's sorrow is his splendor. Perhaps God's sorrow is his splendor. Maybe the greatest thing about God is that he would choose to suffer with us and for us when he didn't have to. Where is God? He suffered for us, and he suffers with us." The last question I want to mention is this. So how do I live in a dangerous world in light of the inevitability of loss? Right? How do we do this? How do we live in this dangerous world where we know inevitably we are going to lose something that we care about? Well, let me tell you, the Bible is very clear about this. I mentioned earlier that Jesus said, in this world you will have trouble. He didn't say, follow me and you'll have cotton candy and puppies. He didn't say that. He said, hey, follow me and you'll have trouble, just like everybody else does. Let's look at the entire thing that Jesus said there, okay? Let's look at the context of it. So John 16, verse 33, we'll put on the screen. Jesus says, "I have told you these things so that in me you may have peace. In this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world." And so followers of Jesus are called to embrace God, to accept every moment of life as a gift, and to put their hope in him. Towards the end of that book by Nicholas Volderstoff, he reflects on the death of his son, and he thinks about when God, as the Bible promises, will resurrect everyone who has died. Everyone is going to come back to life. And he writes this in his book. He writes, I don't see how he's going to do it. But I suppose if he can create, he can recreate. And then he writes in a spirit of honesty that I think we all go through at times. You know, even people who believe struggle with doubts. We all do. He writes, I wonder if it's all true. I wonder if he's really going to do it. I wonder if I'll hear Eric say someday, hey, Dad, I'm back. And then he writes as if it's the words of God to him. But remember, I made all of this, and I raised my son from the dead. A day is coming, maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but the day is coming when this will be the truth. And then he quotes from the Bible, from the book of Revelation chapter 21, as if God is speaking these words to him. Look, God's dwelling place is now among the people, and he will dwell with them. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. And then Volderstoff writes this. Okay, so goodbye, Eric. Goodbye. Goodbye. Until we see. Until we see. Until we see. God is a God of love who never intended for us to suffer. We brought suffering to the world. God's response to us messing up his world royally was not one of retribution, but instead to come down and suffer for us on the cross. And now he suffers with us. And a day is coming when we are going to live in a new life, a life without suffering, and he is going to wipe away every tear from our eyes. So even in our pain, we have hope because we put our hope in him. And we're going to give you a few minutes right now to do just that, to reflect on all this. And if you want, you can talk to God about all this and maybe grieve for the first time, something that you've been playing the quiet game about. And I hope ultimately to find your hope in him. During this time, the band's going to play a song, and we also have communion available. Communion is a piece of bread and a cup of juice that remind us of Jesus' body and blood given on the cross for us. And they're a reminder of God's love, that God's response to what is wrong in us and to the pain that we brought into his world was to suffer for us. That's how much he loves us. And so communion is a chance for us to thank him for that. And if you would like to take communion, you can get up during this song and you can go to any of the three tables and you can get the bread and juice and bring it back to your seat. And after you pray, when you're ready, you can take that. So how about I lead us into this time by praying? Let's pray. God, usually our services here at Verve are very cheerful and fun, and we laugh a lot. But the reality is we live in a world where we hurt a lot. And there's lots of good things about life, for sure, but we all go through suffering and loss. And there's not a manual that we're given, you know, as youngsters, here, read this, you'll know what to do. And so we need to talk about this stuff. And I thank you for being a God who loves us so much that in the Bible, we see people suffering. We see people shouting and screaming and questioning you, and they're people that you love and that you bless. We see that you are a God who's big enough to handle our questions. And in the Bible, you promise us hope. You know, Jesus said, in this world, you will suffer, just like everybody else suffers. But the difference is you can suffer with hope. And without you, we suffer without hope. God, my prayer is that ultimately every person in this room would say yes to a relationship with you, not to a religion, but a relationship with you, that you live with them and you guide them through life, and that we learn to live life with hope. And I thank you for what you did in coming down for us and going to the cross for us and taking our suffering on yourself. And I pray all these things in Jesus' name. Amen.